And for you, is this going to be an introduction? I mean, you're going to have seen this before. I haven't really decided on the exam yet, because this is a different course, too. This is not the same course that you've taken. It's adapted a bit. Have you gone on to the new page? Blackboard? You look on the content. And it's not doing anything. That's what I need. I don't see it. Because it's saying it. Alright, so the recording might have started. We're just trying to get the machine working. And it's not doing anything, right? We'll look at the recording. We're having some difficulties. We will be working trying to fix it during the next 45 minutes. Right. I might stop, make a new recording, and send it out later. But now we just have to find the remote control for the projector. I'm gonna go get input, yeah.
But here, the participant is PSP single. And PSP my school life.
Yep.
So, actually, I've ten PSP, so we can go close several times. But, I don't know, maybe we need one more. Is this the compulsory course to master the technique? No, it's not so hard. It's not so technical. Yes, it's not so hard, but you have to think. Sorry, I...
What's your application? What's your application?
My God. Okay, I'm focused on software security.
Post on HDMI. Take one of this. Hello, hello. Vi har bytt till HDMI också. Så jag har bägge. Jag provar här. Ta ut den eller? Den är nu.
Ja, så vi byter tillbaka med den nu. Sen stod på den.
Är det inte inspelning på bak?
Ja, men.
Ja. Så vi måste använda den i bägge.
Ja, det ser ut som den lite. call back a deal?
No.
Också när du kan, jag behöver den här muffen. Du märker det som att det låter lite här. Det är lätt för mig att få störning. Ja visst. Can you hear me? Muffen har bara. Testing, testing. Ja det. All right, so thank you. So we're 10 minutes into it. And that doesn't look right, does it? No, what it is I extend it. If I do this one, duplicate. All right, I think we're here. So, as I say, this is a recorded lecture. I've pre-recorded, set the times that it will stop at 3 o'clock, right? So this is a course in Social Technical System Enabled Crime. This is lecture one. first, some administrative issues. I sent out an email to figure out how many students are off campus and how many students are on campus. As it stands now, which is the 31st of January, there are no on-campus students for the course. This would mean that the lectures, the timing of the lectures, etc., are different, and we have to decide how we're going to plan this. I'm suggesting I will be running the lectures in at least this month on the allotted times. That's to say on the 13th and on the 27th, the two Mondays that have been scheduled. But we might make changes in March because it doesn't make sense to have the lectures if no one's on it. We can do a different time schedule and do it a different way. The way it works at Jørvik now is that in NTN Jørvik is that you're allowed to go in and out of a course by the 1st of February. So there might be some students that have not registered, etc. But this will be recorded as planned, and I think the lecture on the 13th will be recorded. But I will talk to the administration. This specific lecture, that the learning tasks are to get you to understand what systems thinking is and how social technical thinking is part of systems thinking. So at the end of this lecture, she'll be able to explain how social technical thinking is a subset of systems thinking. Now, of course, in order to do that, we have to understand what systems thinking is. Also at the end of this lecture, we'll be going through the reading material on opportunity structures in crime, and you should be able to place social technical analysis and map it into the criminological theories of environmental criminology and looking at root cause analysis of different types of crime. So the reading material that was given out beforehand, and some of you have read it, is that you were supposed to read the one material called Introduction to Systems Thinking, read chapters 1 and 13 in the thesis, and read Opportunity Makes the Thief, Really? And So What? From the Crime Science Journal. These are on the, if you see in the blackboard under the learning. There's one student sort of taking this course. And you found the reading now? Yep, good. So this is the reading that we'll be covering in this lecture. Okay. So this is the introduction to systems thinking. I will review this and point out some of the important elements there. I'm just going to turn on this, since we seems to have a lot of technical problems, I'm having plan B, so I will be recording this lecture. Yeah. Another camera, yes. I think so too. And make this work too. Could do that too, yeah. I can do tons of things, yeah. It's amazing how come on. Recording. All right, so this is the first lecture in the course. I'm on slide number 5. I'll be trying to keep up so that people can just hear this and the recording doesn't work. So I know that some of you, I know at least one of you has read the material because there were some comments from a student. This presentation will assume that you have read it, and I'll be highlighting certain aspects. Now, why do we have to do systems thinking? And as Daniel Kim points out, some problems are best solved by analytical thinking and other through systemic perspective. It's a bold statement. Now, I propose, the hypothesis in this course is that to deal with cybercrime, you need to take a systemic perspective. You need, and an analytical perspective will get you so far, but will not help you understand, explain, describe, predict, and control the phenomenon of cybercrime effectively and proactively. And that's the point here they're pointing out in the article. One reason is to understand is that we need to deal with the problem both effectively and proactively. Now, in English, we have a term called efficient versus effective. In many cases, when it comes to phenomena like crime, we can measure crime as being efficient. That is, if a crime occurs, we process it correctly and quickly. Or we can measure crime and policing forces to be effective. That means they actually deter the crime from starting. So it's very hard to measure the efficiency of something when it is proactive. And naturally, in the area of crime, there is an advantage to being as proactive as possible. So one of the reasons we want to do systems thinking is that it helps us to be more proactive. Now, when we say what is systems thinking, and that's what's introduced in the article by Daniel Kim, it gives you a language, and they say some tools, and these tools are more abstract tools than concrete tools. So the next slides, I will be going through the material presented by Daniel Kim. So what is systems thinking? Clearly, it starts off by saying it's a vocabulary to describe systemic behavior. So systems thinking is a way of describing what a system does. So it's a descriptive. As I say, for this session, I'll be jumping to some extent between chapters one in my thesis, which was reading material here, and this material. And it is going through this about why we do descriptive systems. Now, first off, when we say systemic thinking, we have to look at the concept of what is a system. Now, there are many areas of definition, but we will, in this article by Daniel Kim, he uses the term interrelated and or interdependent. Now, in the article itself, Kim refers to this as or interdependent. And we have to sort of decide what's the difference between things that are interrelated and interdependent. Now, they give an example. If something is interdependent, that means if that part does not exist, the system cannot do the next phase, that is to achieve a purpose. So when we try to define what a system is, we have these three terms. We try and find parts of something that are interrelated, and are interdependent. It's not an or situation. It's not that many things are interrelated, but they're not dependent. For example, now, this lecture. Is this lecture dependent on students present in the classroom? No. Are students that are on campus and students off campus interrelated? Yes or no? But since they're not interdependent, they're not part of the social technical system in that regard. If I had an assignment that said students on campus have to cooperate with students off campus, then they're interdependent. So when you're trying to figure out what a system is, you have those two terms, the vocabulary. They are interrelated. Students off campus and on campus are interrelated. Are they interdependent in the present structure of the course? No. And I use that word structure, which is part of vocabulary. What do we mean by structure? And I get more into that later. Now it says the system wants to have a unified purpose. And yes, I think students off campus and students on campus have a unified purpose. They want to learn, they want to get credits, etc., etc. So there is a common purpose among the students and the teachers in that regard. In the reading, she gives different examples of what is a collective and what is a system. And she lists things like, abstractly enough, like a bowl of fruit. Is a bowl of fruit a system? And I won't embarrass everybody in terms of asking, do you think a bowl of fruit is a system? But she says, it's not. But it is, she says later on. Or he says later on. Sorry, I keep referring to Kim. Kim is not a girl's name. It's a family name. Now, at the micro biological level, they are related, right? If you have a bowl of fruit and one fruit starts to rot, what happens? The whole system starts rotting. One rotten apple wrecks the system. So they become interdependent in the sense that every one of those parts, every one of those apples in that fruit system has to be not infected. How are they interrelated, the fruit? Well, at a microbiological level, they have the same substance so that the attacking bacteria at that level, they become a system. This is something that we get later on in the concepts of echelons. When you're looking at systems, we're looking at system or system concept. This is not covered that well in this material, but it's covered in chapter one of the thesis. What was interesting is a bit dated, the article, because Kim suggests that a kitchen is a collective, not a system. He says it only becomes a system if a human enters it. Now, she's saying, well, the fridge and the stove are not connected. But going on to 5G in the future, these appliances will be connected. Now, if the purpose of it, going back, so her example when she mentions a kitchen can be confusing because says it is a collective of appliances. It's not a system. But a kitchen is a system. Its purpose is to cook food. The appliances are connected at a certain electrical level. If one appliance overheats the circuits, then all the appliances go out. They're all interdependent. So the same thing with the fruit bowl, where the fruit bowl is interconnected on a living system level, a kitchen is a system on an electrical level. Now going back, so we're trying to figure out how to define a system. That's what this, and how to think in systems now. So what are the basic system characteristics that Daniel Kim refers to? He says all systems have to have a purpose. To call something a system, he's suggesting it has to be purposeful, has to have a deontological, teleological. In this case, it has to have a teleological, has the purpose. Now, there are other systems theorists that would not use the word purpose, and later on you would see that, again, at that later. One aspect that's interesting is that if you're going to define something as a system, again, all parts must be present. If the system can achieve its purpose without a part, then that part is not part of the system. So all parts must be present. The other characteristic is that the order in which the system parts are connected affect the performance of the system. So in a sense, mathematically, is what we would call an ordered set. So it's not only that everything is interconnected, it's the order in which they are interconnected. Now it gets a bit circular and tautological argument when Daniel Kim says that systems attempt to maintain stability through feedback. It can be that the purpose of a system, in some cases, is to maintain stability. So the purpose is to have stability. But this is a higher concept, and we get into the concept of feedback later on in the article. So, again, systems thinking is to help us to describe systemic behavior. And some systemic behavior we have part A, is related to part B, is related to part C, is related to part D. And then we have this concept of feedback. So in this case, you have a hierarchical or an ordered set of interactions where A reacts with B, B reacts to C, C reacts to D. Or the system can have feedback loops. So A reacts to B, B reacts to C, and then C gives feedback to A. And D gives feedback to B. So we get into the concepts of loops. Okay, so a system is a collection of items, parts, things, living and non-living, that serve a purpose. And that in order for the system to perform that purpose, all parts need to be present. Now, the word present, of course, has to be operationalized. And later on, we get into what that means more commonly. Now, on page 6, he has a statement saying how we describe our actions in the words affect the kinds of actions we take. So this is when you get into semantics of system thinking. I give a really strange example in Scandinavian countries that'd be so foreign to many people outside. In Sweden, they have a term that was brought in about the 17th century, and it comes from old Icelandic tales, and it's called ættastupa. An ættastupa is an action taken in the society. There's actually a word for it, and what that is a so-called type of euthanasia that was supposedly practiced in the northern cultures. So if someone was old, they would voluntarily jump off a cliff. So there's a place where they would jump off, and that was called an ættastupa. So just the fact that there's a word like that exists, that the old, when they become a burden on a society, would eliminate themselves from the system. That word exists. And it's funny, when you look at other cultures, that word doesn't even exist. And that's where we're getting to different concepts. So the words that we use help us to reinforce our actions. Now, there's actually something wrong with this diagram, the way it's written. But he's saying that in order to understand systems, we have events, and these events generate a pattern, and these patterns show a systemic structure. Now, what's interesting with the diagram is it's a bit odd, because it seems to suggest in quantity that there are more systemic structures than there are events. But it's the opposite. There are actually more events than there are patterns in a system than there are systemic structures. So the diagram is false in terms of learning. You have to see that diagram reversed. So systemic structure should be on top in the diagram. And then in terms of words, we talk about, in the article, the different types of so-called feedback loops. And he gives an example how these feedback loops affect each other. So we have the situation starting off with orders are decreasing. So, which is indicated by sales up and down, that's C, and A. Sales are up and down, they make promotion material. And then that loop on the left of the picture here is indicating that with the promotions, this might affect that the parts that you have in the system might not be in balance. So both the amount of parts you keep on in storage is affected by your promotions. So these two systems, this creates a system because the promotion is interrelated and affects the amount of parts you keep in the factory or you keep in the warehouse. And if you have a shortage of parts, that will affect your sales. So that would basically suggest now that the sales is connected to the orders, which is connected to the warehouse. These things are interrelated and they're interdependent. So this makes it a business system. And that's how you see that A is related to B, and C and C idea related. So you're seeing how this linear thing here is represented in this diagram here. So systems have certain behavior over time. So in this case, we have some diagrams showing that you have gaps in systems. You have a corrective action. You want the level, and then you're trying to measure the level. This is an example here over time. As you're increasing sales, you have a desired limit, and then you want to fill that gap. And systems have, the measurement gives you different reactions here. This could be going up and could be going down. This could be the amount of sales going up, and this could be the amount of stock in the warehouse. And you have to decide later on. So again, going back to what these diagrams show, these are ways, this is vocabulary, this is the visual vocabulary to help you describe a system behavior. This is an interesting type of feedback loop. In this case here, how management attention to the problem might actually affect the loop because every time there's management there's a detected gap, there's a review meeting. So instead of getting the effective desire effect of actually filling the gap, engineers or salesmen just don't make the orders because they don't want to have more review meetings. So you're seeing how systems can have negative and positive effect on things. So in this case here, as he says, that manager attention to the problem of late parts lead to more review meetings, which tends to make the engineers avoid reporting problems in a timely fashion. So you actually have situations where you're not effective because of the feedback loops. And everybody knows that from practice. And Daniel Kim mentions that. The other interesting part of the article, we talk about beforehand, we have events, and we have different types of verbs. So we, from a systems perspective, we react to events. We should adapt to patterns. We should be creative when it comes to system structures. And then when we start reflecting, we need mental models. And I have a whole section in the next part of the lecture on mental models. And then we have to have a vision. So there's a hierarchy of perspective when you're looking at a problem. So we're using systems thinking to model thinking and dealing with the problem. In many cases, the analytical approach is very good for providing these two areas. If you just want to deal with events and patterns, you can use the analytical approach. But when you start getting into system structure, you have to start with systems thinking. So going back to where we started off, that certain problems are best dealt with by an analytical approach. So if your problem was only to deal with and make the reactivity of the system to a certain event, it would be better to just take an analytical approach. If you just wanted to deal with the patterns, adaptivity, then you're getting more, you might want to have system approach. But it can be that an analytical approach would solve this. But when you start getting into systemic structure, that the problem that is occurring is a structural problem, then you start to have to think systemically, which is creative, reflective, and generative. So these are the questions. If you want to fill a gap, these are the way you have to ask questions. Which gaps are driving our system, when and by how much? How accurate do we know the gap? How do we know that crime is on the increase, cybercrime is on the increase? How accurate do we know that? How are we monitoring that cybercrime is increasing? What are the different methodologies to close the gap? And how long will it take to close the gap? It can be that this system is oscillating, and it can be that we're doing the right measure at the wrong time. All right, so that's the discussion on systems thinking. It's 5 minutes, I'm a bit 5 minutes ahead of schedule. I will start off this, and I will end in, so this is the next section of the lecture. As I said before, going back to the goals of this lecture, one was to understand what systems thinking is. And we'll sum up a bit and then start in this section. Systems thinking is a way of modeling the problem and thinking about the problem and starting the whole way down, making generalizations, reflections, creating new structures that will deal with making the system more adaptive and more reactive to events. The first thing we have to do is use a certain type of language, and we describe a system as a collection of parts that are interrelated and interdependent that are there to achieve a purpose and or many purposes. And remember, it's not a question of and or when it comes to interrelated and interdependent. They should be interrelated and interdependent to call it a system. Now, just for those in the last, 5 minutes, whatever, 3 minutes left, example of an exam question from what you just heard. What? Okay, I have a question. Students ask a question, yes? So, good question, and we'll get into the next section of the one, but the answer actually is that you want to measure your degree of interrelationship and degree of interdependency. So first off, we say that in the definition that Kim gives, he says that if the resource is removed, then the whole system can achieve its purpose. That, you will see, gets you into some system, as you're saying, trying to find the boundaries. So the way we usually define the boundaries of a system, in 2 minutes, is that you have a system, you have the environment, there are resources here, and there are resources here. If this is a resource that exists both in the system and in the environment, we could define a system by saying any resource where we have 50% control of the resource. If we cannot control the resource, it's the environment. So the boundary is defined as the percentage of control. If this resource is here and I can only control 30%, then it's the environment, it's not the system. So we define the boundaries of the system by operationalizing the percentage that we can control. So that's the boundary. So, and the point is, we have to, as you pointed out correctly.
The facility is a part of this lecture.
Yes.
Okay. So like we have taken an issue, and so we cannot start this lecture. So the
I can.
Yes. So
is part of the system. Okay. And then is the temperature part?